bing me. You bing me, I'll slap a hoe.
Emails.podbean.com.
It's Google, motherfucker.
Welcome to the call to Ian, you cop-sucking motherfucking dog shit ass cunt bitch.
Welcome to emails.podbean.com. This week we are joined by Michael Patrick. He's had a change in name. He's going by Michael Patrick now. To keep his professional life and his comedy life separate, which we're going to respect that. And so the instructions on the show, you got to turn up. You got to drink something, you got to smoke something, go to your place, your man cave, wherever you hang out, and just relax. Check out the podcast. So this week you got Michael Patrick's set. He's going to do some jokes. And then coming up, you got my set after that. And then you have us sitting down and trying to talk about the economy. I'm an idiot, and I tried to ask as many questions as I could, and we realized there's going to have to be a part 2, and probably a part 3 and 4. But for the next one, we're going to try and get Dave Leopel to come join us, because he's going to be able to ask more educated questions than the ones I'm asking, and maybe have a more substantive discussion. Meantime, in between time, guys, listen to the podcast. I hope you enjoy. I hope you enjoyed Scott Brennan and Joe Lee. We're having fun now. And, alright guys, tell people about the podcast and shit. Alright, peace!
Florida is definitely not Michael McCabe. Guys, make some noise for Michael Patrick!
Hello, everybody!
Yay!
How's everyone doing tonight?
Good.
So, has anybody here ever sent an unsolicited dick pic?
Yeah.
I have never sent an unsolicited dick pic, but I have been asked for a dick pic before. And I get weird about sending a dick pic. Because I have no dick confidence. So I like to play this game called Dick Pic Roulette. Where I ask the AI on my phone to find me the nicest dick you can. And then I take that dick and I send it to the girl who asked for the dick pic. Because she asked for a dick pic, she never specified it had to be mine. And then I always get a text back saying, WTF, I thought you were white. Because invariably they always send a big black dick. And you asked for a dick pic, you never specified it had to be mine. If you really want to see mine, you can come over. I wouldn't recommend that, though. Yeah, no dick confidence. I can thank my ex-girlfriend for that one. She ruined me. But, anybody here ever disappoint their father?
Shit. Yeah.
Cool. So have I. But here's the deal. I was born with a bad heart, which means I was never going to be athletic. And my dad was a Division I All-American in track and field, qualified for the 1980 Olympic trials. And I'm his firstborn son, so he wanted me to really follow in his footsteps. So I'm born with a bad heart. So, I become bored, and the first thing I do is disappoint my father, because I'm never going to be fast. The fastest thing I ever did was disappoint my father. He wanted me to be the next Deep Prefontaine, but I was the Usain Bolt in disappointing fathers. So speaking of Deep Prefontaine, how many of you guys know who he is? Cool. They only made two movies about him. But no, he was supposed to be the star of the 1976 Olympics. But do you know who the star of the 1976 Olympics was? Bruce Jenner. So, how many of you know who Bruce Jenner is now?
Yeah, Caitlyn.
Yeah, it's Caitlyn Jenner. I got a theory why he became a woman, but let's just say that his daughters must be real pissed off at him because he's a Trump supporter. Everyone knows that, right?
Yeah.
Caitlyn Jenner's a Trump supporter. But Donald Trump's a white supremacist, and his daughters do nothing but fuck black dudes. I guess they're trying to get back at him, or get back at her somehow. Yeah. But that's what you get for having a mom that fucked OJ.
Oh. He got the juice.
All right. So I'm trying to get back into shape. I recently quit drinking.
Yeah.
Hold your fucking applause. Hold your applause. You're going to hate the rest of this joke. I had to quit drinking because one day I woke up shaking worse than Michael J. Fox. I said you would not like the rest of that joke. So, I want to get back into shape, but I don't like going to the gym. I really don't like going to the gym. And they say, and I want to do it quickly. I want to have the most efficient exercise. And they say the most efficient exercise is sex. So, I want to start this club at a mattress firm. Where you get a bunch of overweight people, you pair off, and you exercise by having sex. I call this club Fatties Fucking Fatties. So I got one more that I'm gonna get out of here on. So white supremacists want to make this country white again. But if they really want to see what a white America looks like, really all they gotta do is watch the Hallmark Channel.
So.
All right, I've been Michael Patrick. You guys are great.
Yeah.
Keep it going for Anton, everybody.
Yeah.
Guys, are you guys still with me? Are you guys in it with me? Could you at least be like my ex-girlfriend when it comes to her emotions and fake it a little bit? Are you guys still with me?
Oh, yeah.
She was right. Passive-aggressive work this whole time is cool indeed. Hey, moving on. Guys, your next comedian, funny dude, nice young man. Give it up for Ian Ellis. Talking about his ex-girlfriend. That thing looks like a girl I used to date. That was a period of my life. Spooky chicks. That's what I was into. I can't raise this at all. Everybody here wants to be a comedian? Clap it up. You gotta do more than just want it, man. Gotta work on that shit. I got a girl pregnant, so it's not happening. All that gigging every night and working up the ladder. I gotta go change diapers. This is my exit interview. I want it as bad as any of you will ever want it, but I'll be changing diapers, so this is a hobby. I hope you guys are impressed. I'm worried about having a kid because I think about, like, I gotta teach it. Like, what the fuck the world is? I have no idea. Every time I try to answer a question, I realize I'm fucking retarded. I wanna, like, see my wife's boobs, eat, and take a nap. And my kid's gonna outgrow that by, like, week 7. Like, I love those titties, but also shiny objects. And be like, I don't know where they came from. Realizing how much I don't know about the world, like, I just sat down with Michael McCabe, and that felt like my exit interview on The Species. I was like, are we going to build a utopia? He said, nope. The Illuminati is real, and we're going to fuck your shit up. I believe in survival of the fittest. I was like, well, fuck, I never passed algebra. I should feed him up now. Oh, I still have the advantage. Cubs is going on. I missed out on sports. Do you guys get happiness out of that? Sports? Clap it out. Like dozens of times a year, people get together and barbecue and hang out and get laid and get drunk. That's a great time. Missed out because I don't understand the rules to any of them. I don't know hockey, basketball, or football. God is coming. You guys excited? Talking a lot about exit interviews. It's almost over. We're done. God doesn't exist right now. You can just do whatever the fuck you want. But he's coming. About 15, 20 years, we're going to make him out of computers. So you have... Michael McCabe is doing it. He's up to some evil shit. It's just going to take over everything. And then you guys better be ready to meet God. Hi, I'm Alex. Went to college. Now I'm trying to be a comedian. Please don't wipe me off the face of the earth. I hope that works out for you.
Me too.
I'll be changing diapers. Telling my kid about how much he's missing out. Oh, man, you're not even going to see 25? Shit. You're going to have your heart broken. Then you're going to fuck some bitches. You guys believe in aliens?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck yeah. A lot of applause breaks. That's how I get by. Here's the thing about our species. A long time ago, there was Neanderthals. And they were a different species. But they walked the earth and they had houses and language and religion. But they were a different fucking species. If it happened twice here, it's got to be happening someplace else. So aliens are definitely real. Which is sad, because... based on the best evidence we have, the only thing they came here for is to put things in our butt. We really hope they would have loftier goals than that. They beat us in the space race, and they're like, you know what we're doing? Putting things in their pooper! Alright, I see the light. We're gonna close out on Shrek. J.R. Castro made me think of this. Shrek is fucking horse shit. Everybody gets together. I'm like Fiona, and you're like Shrek. I was never into Fiona, right? I liked fucking Cameron Diaz. Like when she was fucking skinny and hot. I'm okay with me being me, but I'm not fighting with you being you, you fat cunt. Right? Donkey agrees, you put on some fucking poo weight. That's how the movie should have gone. Ladies. Somebody was like, you're just like Shrek and Fiona. I was like, go fuck yourself. Alright, she's working on it. She has a thyroid problem right now. Fucking baby is coming. Alright, my name is Ian Ellis. I love you. Good night. Hi, it's Keeping Going for Ian Ellis.
Paul Volcker called Voodoo Economics, which is what that scene in.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ian Ellis Podcast. Today we're joined by a very special guest, my friend Mr. Michael McCabe.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
He's been on here before. shout out to Sean Thomas Gill and whoever else was around when we were hanging out. We're here to talk about economics, because I don't understand anything.
And I, just to give you some credentials, I have a bachelor's degree in finance with a minor in quantitative economics from DePaul University. I also have a degree.
Damn, the plane is going to land on top of us. We're about to get 9/11 for this conversation. That doesn't tell you about the Illuminati.
I also have a degree. I also have an accounting. I also have a bachelor's degree in accounting. But for the last 4 years, I've been doing pretty much all aspects of real estate investment in for all sorts of companies, mainly private equity investment firms. But I've had to study, or I've had to use a lot of my economic skills to study markets and stuff like that. From what I understand from Ian, this is going to be pretty much just basics.
I mean, feel free to go as deep as you want, but my level of understanding, to give people my background, I never finished algebra. So, it's the one class I'm shy of for my bachelor's degree. I got it waived. And I was going to do this other class, but I was writing my thesis at the time, and I thought I was done with the class. Turned out I had only done the midterm. So I found out I failed. By then, I'd already moved across the country, and I was like, all right, I'll live here for a while, and then I'll go back to school, get that class, and then turn it into a whole thing. They want me to drive down, get recertified, because, you know, like, dyslexia goes away. Give it a couple years. You might not be stupid anymore.
I didn't know you were dyslexic.
Yeah, horrendously dyslexic. I can't spell or do math to save my life.
See, I thought dyslexia really didn't affect mathematics.
Unless there's different... I could just be retarded. If that's what you're implying, I'll take it. I'll wear that hat.
No, I'm sure I've heard your comedy.
Guys, we are here at the airport, live.
Well, we're only a couple miles away from O'Hare, so...
Alright, well, let's last goddamn plane go by. Where should we start?
Well, where do you want to start?
We were talking outside of the Comedy Shrine, and you were telling me about the GDP.
Okay, so we'll start there.
To which I said, what is the GDP?
Okay, so GDP is Gross Domestic Product, which is pretty much the amount of product that a country produces economically every year. It's related to the gross national product and the gross domestic income, GNP and GDI.
So what is the difference between those three things?
So the gross domestic product is what we actually produce,
right,
economically in terms of dollar amounts that we actually produce. Gross national product is what the country actually produces, because sometimes in the GDP you include foreign products that are made foreignly but are sold here in the United States. What GNP is what is actually made here in the country.
Okay.
And gross domestic income is actually what those dollar amounts, like the amount of income that's coming in from either domestic investment or foreign investment in dollar amounts, or foreign or domestic production.
So you've got like the things we make here, the money we make here, and then the money we make overseas that still belongs to us.
Yes.
It's kind of the easiest way to look at it.
That's a very simplistic answer, but yes. But what the gross domestic product is very interesting, is very good in economics, because what it does is it helps us determine our trade, the trade deficit or the trade surplus.
Now, is that our national debt?
No, national debt is the amount of money that we have borrowed from foreign countries where we sold them bonds.
All right, so I'm going to write that down, and we're going to come back to national debt. But before we do, let's get back to...
Because national debt is more monetary policy, less economics.
Okay.
So that's a different... That can get very complicated.
So what were we talking about that I misconstrued?
We're talking about trade deficit.
All right, so what is the trade deficit?
So trade deficit is pretty much the amount of product that we export and the amount of product that we import.
And the deficit being that we're importing more than we're exporting?
Correct.
Now, we're not physically exporting things, but we do export all of our technology, culture. Is that not enough to keep us afloat? We need steel mills and cattle?
No, because technically, well, a lot of the stuff that we do import is... It's all built out of foreignly, like computer chips, all that stuff. Or every like thing that's produced...
Designed here, produced there.
It's designed here and pretty much assembled in the U.S., but a lot of the components are assembled outside of the United States. And so all that stuff is imported, and that is considered an import. And believe it or not, the U.S. is the largest export
is it one of our biggest resources?
It's grains.
It's grains?
Yeah, farming. A lot of farm meat, cheeses. The U.S. is the food supplier of the world,
the
pretty
entire
much.
Planet. Because we have space and we have nice weather.
No, it's more that we have space and we have fertile soil.
Fertile soil.
Because we have a large aquifer in the middle of the country that produces massive amounts of rich and rich soil.
Who knew the aquifer is the greatest? That's the key to our success. So the reason we're the best, guys.
Yes and no.
Because
actually, Russia also is a very large farming.
Okay.
They pretty much feed Asia and Europe.
All right.
Especially with their grains.
And who are we feeding? Africa? South America?
We feed a lot of U.S., Asia as well. Eastern.
We beat ourselves.
Yeah.
Don't miss a meal.
Yeah, the 3 square meals a day.
So you were saying, like, our domestic product is never going to go down. It's always going to go... It's
no, it will go down. It will go up and down.
I thought it was connected to the birth rates. Is that what you were explaining to me?
No, that is... that's gross domestic income.
Okay, domestic income.
Yeah.
Do you want to start there?
No, because it's really pointless. We're really not going into anything important there.
Okay. Trump got elected because he's the businessman for America.
Trump is a moron.
Well, we've had different financial schemes for our country. Roosevelt, Reagan, Bush. Like, I really like, and I could be wrong about this, but everything they accredit to Bill Clinton seems like it came from George Bush Sr. having, like, fiscally conservative policies that saved money.
Yes and no. Because what happened during the first Bush administration, first Clinton administration, is that we had the technological revolution.
You know what might be a good through line is for us to pick a president you want to start with, or an economic system you want to start with, and tell me how America has changed.
So let's start with...
Gold standard?
Let's start with Lincoln.
Lincoln, Jesus. So this goes back to slaves.
All right. Well, we were an agrarian culture, which means we were a farming culture. But what happened, why we had the Civil War, was pretty much economic and also slavery. The South was becoming a... The South was a largely agrarian culture where farming was a major component, whereas...
They grew shit.
Yes. And they needed massive amounts of labor.
Yeah.
Whereas the Industrial Revolution was happening in the North where we were producing, and the Industrial Revolution hadn't hit the farming communities yet, but it was coming. But what happened was that the Industrial Revolution, after the Civil War, during...
It's interesting to me that, like, at one point, we relied on slaves, and then technology came along, and we had a fight over that. Whereas, like, now, we rely on people, we're going toward technology, and there's no, like, Luddite revolution. But they're like, fuck all these machines and robots and exports.
No, it's actually quite the opposite.
People aren't concerned.
No, because what is happening is that they need people to run these machines. But it's becoming a more... It's becoming less and less of a physical economy, more to a intellectual economy.
Okay. Let's not get ahead of ourselves. We'll go back to Lincoln. All right, so Lincoln, we have a civil war.
Because the U.S. was at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution.
Yes.
So what was happening was that the North was becoming very industrialized. A lot of people, they were producing a lot of stuff in factories, and the income was getting way higher than it was in the South. And the South, and because of that, they needed more laborers, and they wanted to get rid of slavery and pay a decent wage. So that was happening.
Yep. Awesome. You just love it when random people walk out and hear you talking about slavery. You're like, this isn't going to go well.
So then you had the abolitionist movement.
So in the North, the quality of life is improving.
Correct.
You don't have a single pair of clothes. You have many kinds of clothes. You have fashion. You have technology. You're printing books. You're making pans, pots, shit like that. And that's a thriving economy, and the quality of life is going up. And it's also getting denser and denser. You're getting cities now.
Yes.
Like, big building cities as opposed to, you know, rural towns.
Right, yeah, I mean, New York, during Reconstruction, Reconstruction is when the U.S. had its largest influx of...
Immigrants?
Of immigrants, yes. Ellis Island. Pretty much from 1870 through 1920 is the largest influx of immigrants into the United States, mainly Western European and Chinese and Japanese on the West Coast.
And were we particularly tolerant toward all those people as they got here, or it was all like, fuck yourself?
No. The U.S. has never been tolerant to
of immigrants. We don't even like ourselves.
Well, immigrants of all, I mean, the paddy wagon is named the paddy wagon because it's where they put all the drunk Irish when they would get drunk. That's why it's called a paddy wagon. Because paddy is actually a slur to the Irish.
The clown is blackface for Irish people. I don't know if you know that. Ronald McDonald, super racist image. Take that, millennials. Go burn down McDonald's.
Let's not get into Ronald McDonald. I worked for that company, and I'm having PTSD right now.
So we get through an industrial revolution.
Correct.
We get through a civil war.
Because you had the Rockefellers, the J.P. Morgans.
Industrialists.
Yes.
Railroads.
Railroads were
railroads
built.
Railroads are big.
John Deere created the Reaper, which really changed farming in the United States. The South was no longer a farming culture, because the farms now switched more to the Midwest, where we had more of the grains, and where we could grow grains and food, corn, wheat, soybeans.
Here's a great thing about human history. We were just hunters and gatherers for hundreds of thousands of years, and then agriculture, farming. And suddenly with farming, you can have tribes and villages, and they get trade routes and kingdoms. And but it was like 5,000 years before we started writing shit down. And so when we started writing stuff down, we assumed we came into this world farming. We completely blacked out all of our history where we were hunters and gatherers.
So if you want to go back to really study economic theory here, we can go back and study David Hume and Adam Smith, who are the fathers of economic theory.
In America?
Okay. Like, these guys are the fathers
Let's
of economics.
Start there. Give me each of their bios.
So David Hume and...
Coming up in this corner, weighing in at 435 potatoes.
So David Hume and Adam Smith pretty much came up with modern economic theory, laissez-faire economics, in the past they wanted everybody to be good at everything, like hunting and gathering. But then what Hume and Smith posited was that we needed people should focus more on being excelling at one particular skill.
Once you have a surplus, you have inequality.
Yeah.
But you also have new jobs that are created. Protect the food. Prepare the food. And take the food around the country.
Well, you also have
people, specialty labor.
Yes. Where you get these people who would make horseshoes, and they would trade them to the farmers for food, and you have a market that's created.
Which is not that long ago. My grandmother has memories of going to watch the blacksmith put horseshoes on a horse.
Yeah, that is. But this was all the way back in the 1600s or the 1800s. I'm sorry. This was early, like 1735 is when Adam Smith really wrote his.
So when they say like let the economy decide, it's going to like these theories. So his
let the markets decide. That is pretty much laissez-faire economics.
Okay.
But then you get into the area of too complex, where you need government regulations such as utilities, and in modern times now, healthcare. Healthcare has become so complex that there is an argument to be made that it should be a government-regulated industry, sort of like the utilities, the airlines, and the telephone companies.
Here's kind of like a bigger idea to unpack. What's his name? Moore, the big fat guy. Documentary guy. What's his name?
Michael Moore. Okay.
He did his thing, Psycho, or The Corporation, where he posited that our economy was basically a sociopath.
Yes.
Because companies are owned by shareholders, and they're legally required to turn a profit, so they're legally required to not care.
They're not legally required to turn a profit, but their goal is to make money for their stakeholders.
At all costs.
Yes. But Adam Smith had said that while it's for the good of the economy, if your actions are going to disrupt the economy, but if you're going to, because that's why monopolies were always outlawed, because the goal of one company is to control everything.
Yeah, all the money.
Because that's what they want to do, is make as much money as possible.
Now, but given that they want to make as much money as possible, is government intervention necessary to prevent, like, poison food or a low quality of product?
Yes, but that is generally hearkened by competition. Because if you're going to have competition, then...
So when Trump says we don't need these regulations, what we need is competition, he might be right. Because we're going to buy the thing that's gluten-free, we're not going to buy the thing that's fucking made out of...
Right, but if you're not regulating... And these companies collude. This is where you need.
They don't care if their factory workers get cancer. They don't care about hours, age.
And this is where the unions. And this is what.
Awful.
This is what the unions were formed from. Because back during the Industrial Revolution, is you were having 18-hour work days. Children as young as 7 or 8 were working 18 hours in these factories, losing fingers, no health care, no benefits, pennies, what's pretty much going on in Southeast Asia right now.
They're experiencing some economic growth, and it's improving the quality of their life.
Correct.
Arguably.
And that's actually what happened to China over the last 15 years. China's economy over the last 15 years has matured, has become a mature economy, and is no longer a growth economy.
All right. We're going all over the place. So from laissez-faire, what was the, not alternative or counter, but what was the other dominant theory in economics?
Well, you have Marx's collectivism, which was proven not to work on multiple occasions.
So the thing I heard that really turned me on it was, like, Marx saw the inequality as something that could be stamped out. Where it's like, the inequality isn't something that can be stamped out, it's a natural byproduct of having excess. But you have to balance that out with, like, you can only have so much inequality before the people decide to burn everything down.
True, but what Marx also wanted was that everything be regulated by a Politburo, by the people. Pretty much he wanted an anarchist. He was an anarchist, pretty much.
Anarchy, very appealing.
Not really.
I don't know how you get shit done.
Exactly. And that's actually what happened was, and also what happened was, you had these people who were put in charge, it's called the Politburo. And what happened was that the human condition took over, and these people wanted power.
They turned into lobbyists and congressmen and senators.
But no, what they wanted power, and they turned into Stalin. Lenin was the idealist. Stalin was the power-hungry madman. There's an argument to be made that Stalin was much worse than Hitler.
Because he killed more people.
Yes.
all right, so it's either communism or laissez-faire.
Or, well, not laissez-faire, but a market-based economy.
Market-based economy.
Right.
Capitalism. We fall squarely into market-based economy.
Well, it's because it's the only one that's proven to actually work without the human condition being over...
Without our fatal flaws fucking everything up.
Yes.
Competition will prevent your desire for power.
Mm-hmm. And especially it works especially well for commodities, such as food, gold, minerals.
All right. So we're on a timeline. We get through the Civil War, Industrial Revolution, we're an economy, we're thriving.
Right.
World War One, World War Two.
We're still an industrial economy.
And it changes because it goes from men working and women staying at home to men and women both working. So now it's two income homes, which leads to growth. More income means more homes, more cars.
And then in the 1940s, we start, because of World War One and World War Two, you start to have the technological revolution. Because during World War One, we perfected the science of flight.
Okay.
The Wright brothers perfected flying. You've got blimps. You've got the advent of the assembly line by...
I do want to ask you this before I forget. So at some point we could have chose public transportation or automobiles, and we went squarely on the side of automobiles and independence.
Well, at this point, automobiles were much more efficient mode of transportation, and we still had a large farming economy back then.
People were mad. They were like, why not get a horse? It just needs grass to run.
And also, we were still a much larger farming community. We hadn't had the Dust Bowl yet in Oklahoma or in the Midwest. The cities hadn't quite developed yet. You had the Industrial Revolution was still taking place. Henry Ford created the assembly line. Detroit became the second largest city in the country because of the automobile industry.
It used to be about something.
Yes. And Detroit used to be a gem.
Was there any trickery or, like... Because we had to choose either public transportation or cars. Like, we built highways as opposed to train lines.
Because at this point, combustion engine was a lot more efficient and cleaner than the coal-based engines for...
So that was the smartest thing to do at that particular time.
At that particular time. And also, public transportation, a lot of it is still based on buses and that type of stuff. And yes, the trains
It certainly limits personal choice. Right. And mobility.
And a lot of it was still carriage. Like, a lot of public transportation was still carriages back at that point. When you went, it wasn't until, because most trains run on a combustion engine now, and electricity, like, and that type of stuff. And then when that happened, I want to say the subways and that stuff wasn't built until the 1920s or 30s.
All right, so our economy is going long, Great Depression.
Yes. What happened, it was a multitude of crises at once. What happened was you had the banks, you had a run on the banks. Banks were not regulated back at that point, and they loaned out way too much money. They didn't have enough reserves and what happened was that...
So it's kind of like the same way with our housing market bursting. They were just like, let's give this money away, and then we don't have to be responsible for the debt. And then everybody was like, hey, by the way...
Right, but back then, we didn't have this thing called the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation.
And is that where the FDIC comes from?
Yes. And also, the entire world economy tanked during that period.
Everybody.
Everybody. Because you had the Dust Revolution, so food, the price of food, the Dust Bowl happened in the late 1920s, and the price of food skyrocketed. And back then, that was the largest cost for many people, because you didn't have the...
Was it the Dust Bowl, did our aquifer dry up for a season?
No, what happened was that we had a huge drought in the Midwest, multi-year drought in the Midwest, freak weather, and just nothing grew for several years. And we didn't have the storage abilities that we do now, or the technology.
We didn't have those canned goods.
We didn't have canned goods. We didn't have the silos that weren't storing.
No fridges, no freezers.
Yes. So, that type of stuff. So food, the cost of food skyrocketed. A bunch of companies collapsed because they were highly invested and leveraged in these companies. And also, I don't exactly know what happened, but Wall Street tanked.
So America loses its ass. Mm-hmm. Poverty swells throughout the country.
Right.
We start.
What also happened
shelters.
Was that we also, our population, we were so overpopulated for that point, at that point in time, because of
for our resources.
Yeah, for our resources at that point, because we had just had a massive amount of immigration for the last 50, 60 years. So that's pretty much what happened.
Okay. How do we get out of that?
Well,
and what changes along?
So really what you have was John Maynard Keynes in Cambridge.
He's a rock star.
John Maynard Keynes came up with social capitalism.
Okay.
And this is where you get programs such as Medicaid, Medicare, because people were not being able to retire.
So this is capitalism with the socialist underbelly.
Yes.
Where it's like... It's, you know, we have all the competition in the world, but there are things that we basically consider inalienable rights or quality of life things that are required for all of our citizens, which is like running water, food. These days it's gone up to healthcare.
Well, what happened was that Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security were put into place to make people retire, because you had a bunch of people who were not retiring because they were in these jobs for so long, and they knew they had the innate skills. Nobody else was coming in becoming skilled at these jobs, and so you needed to have more workers.
You just have a generation that can't get in.
Yeah.
And they're like, fuck you guys.
And this is actually what's happening now with the millennials. Well, not technically millennials. I want to say my generation, your generation.
Gen X.
You're 33, right?
35.
Pretty much we are the lost generation. Pretty much, if you graduated high school between 1998 and, I don't want to say 2006, 2007, you are pretty much a lost generation. We're not quite millennials, but we're not quite Gen Xers.
We'll get there. All right. So, coming out of the Depression, we start these social projects, but we keep our capitalism going. What does the economy look like at that point?
Well, what happens, what brings us out of... The
Depression.
The Depression is World War II.
Okay.
War
is great for the economy.
Well, what happened was we had to start making a bunch of these products. A bunch of factories got built and we started making more products. back, because back then war was still fought by machines, not technology.
Okay.
And people.
So we get it.
What also happened in World War II is that you had a massive decimation of the population.
Okay. I can see that you're aroused. Talk to me a little bit about the decline in population.
So, well, you have what? You have a third of the world men population die in World War II. I mean,
they're not only dying, they're also not reproducing.
Right.
So,
and then when these guys come back,
yeah, let's let the plane go by real quick. Marcus is going to be joining us. I'm here to Marcus Neely, citizen.
What's going on?
Today we're talking about the economy. We're going through the history of America right now. Getting excited.
I just put my money in the bank and hope for the best. That's all.
Not a mattress. Put it in the bank.
Okay, so we come out of World War II. These factories are up and running, and the technological and industrial revolutions are sort of converging into one now, because you have the assembly line, and the United States is one of the few countries in the world that is not trying to rebuild itself at this point. So we have our largest growth in the economy ever, because we're the producer of the world. We're the only superpower left.
Everybody else is rebuilding their literal buildings.
Yes.
And we're making TV and movies and cars.
And we're literally producing the products that are rebuilding there.
And we're simultaneously integrating our massive immigrant culture, the freed slaves, and these women that are all part of the workforce. All at the same time, we're all coming together and being like, hey, we're all here. We're in this together. We're America now.
Right. And so all that happens. And then you have the technological revolution. And then also a boon is also the space race, which...
So now we're up to Kennedy?
Kennedy and Stalin. Kennedy, Stalin are pretty much the two best reasons for the technological revolution, because they're racing each other to try and destroy each
Everything
other.
Comes from NASA. The internet comes from NASA. The military is like 20 years ahead of the rest of the general population.
Correct.
So whatever they're inventing is going to be disseminated down to us. Mm-hmm. At some level.
Right. The microwaves. You have broadcast television satellites now. You're getting transcontinental telephone. You're getting these power lines and satellite relays. You're getting space is becoming. And so you're pretty much setting up the economy. And then in the 70s, you kind of have a falter because you have the oil crisis, which is due basically because... everybody hates Israel.
Well, we ran a coup on Iran.
No. Iran... Yes, Iran had a coup.
And their leaders basically said, fuck you, America.
But that didn't happen until 1979.
Okay, well then take us back. Israel. So, World War II ends. We take all these Jews and we put them in the Middle East.
Well, actually, the Brits do.
What the fuck is that? Alright, guys. We're about to be abducted. I think it was a sky train.
So the Brits, so the Zionist movement in Britain, they create Israel and they get rid of Palestine. So there's a huge issue between the Muslims and the Palestinians at this point. And so all these Turkish...
Palestinians were Muslims.
What? Yes.
Palestinians?
Yes. Crazy? They're Muslims.
Okay. Between the Jews and the Palestinians.
And these Islamic nations, they're not happy about it, and they support, and there's always been, because the Jews have always looked down on the Islamic culture as inferior because of Isaac and Ishmael.
Well, I mean, that's some horseshit we made up, but try to keep in mind that the Jews have been kicked out of everywhere.
Right.
Since the Old Testament, they have not had a homeland. Nobody likes them. They're fine. I'm not being anti-Semitic.
but the Jews have
definitely had a rough run.
But it causes a huge tension in the world's largest oil production countries, Saudi Arabia, Egypt.
So previously, we're buying oil from them. We don't
not
care
really,
that they're Muslim.
Not really. Oil production. The automobile industry really takes off in the 50s and 60s.
And then we're running on oil that we're making here in the States?
In the States, mainly Texas, and also Canada is producing a ton of oil.
There will be blood.
Yes. Western Canada is pretty much Texas, if you know anything about Western Canada.
I don't, and I never will.
If Western Canada is...
I was in Canada for 30 minutes and left, and that was my extent of Canada.
Pretty much Western Canada is Texas. It's the Wild Wild West.
I went over a bridge, and my cellular service ended as I went over the bridge. I was so pissed off.
So because we now have these massive... And Eisenhower built the freeway system in the 50s and 60s. So now we have these massive highways. People are taking road trips.
And we have planes.
Planes and oil and plastic. Plastic becomes a huge thing.
Jesus Christ.
So plastic.
Everything is plastic.
Well, with each new invention or each new material made, especially going through time.
And it's all petroleum based.
It's going to create money because it's like it's going for like the new oil. That's like the new thing you're going for in a career.
Well, plastic,
plastic
is petroleum based.
Yeah.
And plastic becomes the major, instead of steel and stuff,
yeah.
And glass, it becomes plastic now.
Yeah.
And now we are in U.S. is starting, because we also have nuclear power, we're also starting to get rid of coal production and steel production.
We're on the fence about, like, do we want to do this or will we blow ourselves up?
So what happens is you have...
We're in the 50s at this point, right?
50s.
America kind of has a vision for itself.
Mm-hmm. And we know we're in the 50s. We're past the 50s now. We're in the 60s and the 70s. We're
space race.
Pretty much technological revolution. So we're in the 70s now. Technology, America's economy starts to falter a little bit because we don't have enough oil to keep producing. And also what we're noticing is that production, because of unions and our high standard of living now, and the suburbs become a thing.
Do you want to talk about the influence of unions? Like, were they seen as sort of a communist threat, or were they welcomed as like, hey, we just wanted it to all be fair, man?
They were seen as a threat to profits, and they were... If you were a union organizer, you were in deep trouble. But what happened was that the unions became so powerful as that they... What the unions did is they took the tactics, which is why unions are now... A lot of unions are run by organized crime back in that time. Which
back
is,
in the day.
But still, I mean...
They had their finger in everything, man.
So organized crime, because organized crime becomes in... They get these unions, they stop messing the corporations because organized crime comes in and starts beating with these companies.
So thank God for the mob?
The mob pretty much creates the unions.
They protected America.
Yeah.
And sit-in jobs.
Shout out to the Italians.
Sit-in jobs too. We can thank them for that too.
And actually, no, it was more immigrants who got fed up. And these, because communities were much closer back then, neighbors knew each other, they all were able to organize against these large companies that were abusing their workers.
Alright, so we are coming up to Reagan. How about we take a quick break?
Okay.
We'll pee, get drinks, and we'll come right back.
Uh-huh. No.
No, no. Alright.
So we're at Reagan. So what Reagan did, Reagan pretty much...
Here's the biggest question.
Mm-hmm.
Reaganomics. Good or fucking stupid?
Both.
Okay. What's good about it?
Well, what Reagan did was he deregulated a bunch of industries that needed to be deregulated, like the airline industry, because that industry had become, the barriers of entry to the airline industry had become so low that it needed to be deregulated and prices needed to be set by the market. So that was very good.
So by regulation, you mean they had a monopoly on it, or you mean they were...
There was a lot of government regulation, and because of the barriers of entry, because of the cost of planes, and also the there's routes that each airline bought.
They were almost red taped out of existence.
That the government controlled.
Right.
So you had American, Delta, United, Continental, and
Spirit.
No, Spirit never existed. What was it? What was that big one? What was the big one that
the Jedi's.
That out of St. Louis. the movie.
It doesn't matter.
Yeah, but so
Playboy.
They deregulated.
Playboy.
So now you have a bunch of price wars, and it led to the low price flights,
which leads to us being able to travel the country more.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Population begins to.
So then you also have the deregulation of the banking industry.
I think I jumped a little bit too far ahead. I want to, let's go back to gold standard versus getting off the gold standard.
So the gold standard, what, so pretty much what it was that the value of the dollar was based on the gold standard and the amount of gold we had in reserve. So what we did was we took ourselves off the gold standard. We pretty much made it the amount of dollars in the economy. So you created pretty much what a currency exchange is. So like, and then you had certain currencies pegged to certain other currencies. Like right now you have the Chinese yuan, which is values is pegged to the US dollar.
Now our currency doesn't come from our government. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
It comes from our Federal Reserve Bank.
But they're not government regulated.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
They have to report to the Treasury Department and to Congress.
All right.
But they are not regulated by the Federal Reserve is not regulated by the government. They have their own policies and they set their own policies.
No.
It's not set by the government, which is a good thing. This is Hamilton versus Jefferson.
I want you to break that down because I know a lot of people freak out where they go, if there's no gold to back up the dollar is worthless. So we could have a run on the banks and we're just making up money that we don't actually have.
No, the value of the dollar is based on the amount of dollars in...
It's tied to our sweat equity and other things beyond...
This is where GDP comes into play. Gross domestic product. Gross domestic product, the amount we produce, the value of the dollar... The purchasing power of the dollar, how many goods you can buy with this dollar, and how it relates to other...
The value of our country decides the value of our dollar, is that...
No, the value, the amount of... The purchasing power of the dollar, the amount of goods that the dollar can purchase on an open market determines the value of the dollar.
Okay. Now you said Smith verse, you were about to break down.
So we're going back to Jefferson versus Hamilton, the Federal Reserve versus just the Treasury Department. So, Hamilton wanted a Federal Reserve system, whereas Jefferson wanted a Treasury system. We ended up having both. We have a Treasury Department, which regulates and handles the amount of money that the government has, and the debt, the national debt, and the amount of trade we have. Whereas...
Isn't that privatized, too? It's not...
No, the Treasury is government-regulated.
Okay.
That's why you have the Secretary of the Treasury. It's part of the government. And then you have the Federal Reserve, which has its own board of directors. The Federal Reserve Board, which is where you have the Federal Reserve Chairman, which was Alan Greenspan, Ben Bernanke, and now Janet Yellen.
Okay. Got a woman in there.
Yes.
Do the Rothschilds own most of our money?
No, China does.
China.
Well, no, China owns most of the American debt. Who owns most of the dollars? It depends on who. It's actually pretty evenly distributed.
So the Rothschilds don't own like 50% of all of the income on the planet.
Correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We can nip that conspiracy in the butt.
I think we can.
Okay. So, we move forward from there.
Because the richest person on the planet is the Sultan of Bhutan.
Bhutan. I always talk about how Jay-Z wishes he could ball so hard. He gets bad bitches, they just own bitches. They just have menageries and shit. I don't have a menagerie. Fuck you!
I guess podcasting?
Making friends, yes. Yeah.
Okay. I'm joining. I'll see everybody be able to do some blow or something. I'll be right back.
You want to talk about math? Yeah, it sounds like doing blow.
Okay, so now we're gonna go back into Reagan. So Reagan deregulated the economy, and he also tried to lower taxes.
Now, so I hear there's trickle-down economics.
That's Reaganomics.
Does that theory work? Because to me, I'll give you the opposition first, mm-hmm. which is quality of life starts at the bottom and comes up. People that have the least, if they have a decent quality of life, crime goes down, quality of life goes up. But if it's trickle-down, then the people on the top disproportionately have too much, and the people on the bottom burn everything to the ground.
Actually, it works, but it also works. It also depends on tax rates.
Does it work long term, or is it a short term game?
It depends on how you tax.
Okay, so pretty good.
So, if you tax the top 1%, much more than you text everybody else, it works. Because, and if you keep, and if you have a, lower, upper middle class to middle class tax rate, it works.
Top 1% being makes over like $200,000 a year, somewhere like that.
500 to 1 million a year.
All right, so you make 500,000 to $500,000 to $1 million a year. Mm-hmm. You're the top 1%.
Yeah,
and you get disproportionately taxed.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And as long as they, because what's happening is that their tax rates are so much closer to, and the amount of wealth that they have is so disproportionate to how everybody else is being taxed, basically on a, because it's a tiered system, but it doesn't, but the buying power is not proportionate.
Oh, sign up. We got the sign up list coming by.
So it's disproportionate comparatively. So they still have much more buying power than someone who's taxed at a much lower rate, because, but as long, but if they, so if you keep the taxes low on the,
it's basically trying to rein in the fact that some people are going to be negatively affected by the fact that there's a surplus.
Yeah,
some people aren't going to have specialty jobs.
So
some people,
if you want, so if you want, so if you want trickle down economics to work, you need to have a strong middle class.
So, Reagan, who is he trying to lower taxes for?
He was trying to lower taxes for the wealthy, but he didn't.
Okay.
And that's why, during the 90s, the Clinton administration worked.
See, I thought it was from George Bush Sr.'s fiscal policies.
Well, George Bush raised taxes on the wealthy.
Right, but I thought he raised those taxes because we were otherwise not going to be able to pay for Social Security. Like, he... Everybody hated him for doing it, but the money he saved is the money that Bill Clinton brags about making. But it's not his policies. That
yes,
that
but
money.
We also had a huge technological revolution in the 1990s.
Internet.
You had the beginning of the computer age.
Bunch of creeps.
During the 80s and 90s, you had the computer age pretty much come of age. Atari, Microsoft, Windows, Apple, the Apple II.
Intronet.
People are getting personal computers.
Yes.
We're moving toward information processing as opposed to
and the free
goods produced.
And the and information being much more readily available. And we're switching more to a data and quantitative economy, more so from a qualitative economy.
So then when we get to Clinton and he starts saying, like, I want to export all of the jobs, is that a great idea or is that a terrible idea? Did he fuck us?
He fucked the baby boomers.
Okay.
But he did not fuck us. What he did was pretty much he changed the economy. We switched from a industrial economy and a physical economy to a intellectual and technological economy. So that revolution happened during Clinton and Bush.
He seemed to have this idea of global, the global economy, where he said, like, if we put these... sweatshop jobs over here, it improves their quality of life over time. Eventually they'll catch up to where we're at, but in the meantime it gives them more money, and then it also allows us to produce stuff cheaper, and our economy can shift from producing stuff to thinking about stuff.
Correct. And that's exactly what happened, and that's why Mexico and China and that's why Mexico and China have had great, especially China, because they were able to, because of their social policies, China was able to keep their wages lower.
Now, in order to make this kind of move, you're taking a very long view. Or at least I think Clinton is looking like 100 years down the line. Because the initial phase of, like, I want you to make sneakers, that's a pretty shitty lifestyle for people. But it will slowly grow them up to catch up to our quality of life.
Well, actually, believe it or not, that was already happening in the 70s. Nike started as an importer of foreign shoes.
Hey, we've had slaves forever.
Yes.
All right?
But
we
yes.
We started with Lincoln.
But yes. So, what happened is then, and also the world got smaller. Technology, communication,
travel.
You were having international travel. You were having telecommunications got way, way better during the 80s and 90s. And you pretty much, the world got smaller. And the economy's gotten way more interconnected. And so you have NAFTA. NAFTA came into play during Clinton, North American Free Trade Agreement, which is now highly criticized.
Well, one thing I understand about during the Clinton era is, like, I wish I could remember the name of the organization, but they would go to countries and they would loan them money to get started, but they loaned it in a way that the country could never pay it back. So they basically, like, financially usurped countries.
The WTO.
Yes, WTO, that's exactly it. Break down the WTO.
World Trade Organization and the World Bank. And actually, the World Bank is the financial arm of the World Trade Organization. So what they would do, they would go into these countries, loan them money to get their economies off the bank, and they would charge them interest rates where they had to create these jobs and to pay off these loans, but they would never be able to do it because the interest rates are so high, and they could never, they had to have such high interest
rates.
They'll
always be paying off the interest rather than the
And they had to have such high taxes that they could never get the economy off the ground.
Now, were we screwing these countries over by doing that?
It wasn't us, it was the WTO and the World Bank.
All right, well, what is the relationship between America and the WTO?
Really nothing.
So they're just this random group of evil people.
Yes.
There's these Nigerian princes walking around scamming countries.
It's funded by mainly a European organization. Because, and you also have the beginnings of the European Union back in the 80s and 90s. Because Europe is being left in the dust by these states in China in terms of...
Well, they're getting kicked out of all the countries that they had formerly colonized. And they're going from a monarch...
That happened in the 40s and 50s.
Going from a monarch to a more elected-based economy. Oh, well, I'm saying, like, this is where they're at in the world. They're going through some changes, too.
Right. And, well, World War II pretty much destroyed colonialism.
Is that where the European Union comes from?
NATO, actually. Because you had Soviet Russia. And then when you had the fall of the Berlin Wall in 89, you have to have the creation of the European Union because Europe is becoming... Because half of Europe's now coming back into play. It's no longer the Eastern Bloc and the Western Bloc.
Here's where all the cool kids are.
We're doing a podcast about the economy.
We're caught up. So now let's get back into... Now let's do theory.
Awesome. All right.
So... Ask away.
Well, I need to get a baseline for where we're at. So, we try trickle-down economics.
Right.
Good or bad? Or, like, has it changed?
It's trickle-down economics. It's good and bad. It depends on the policies of how you administer.
I want to understand, what are the basic principles that govern our economy?
So the basic principles are...
Let's let this fucking skybird fly by. Go ahead and sip on a drink and get some water. If you want to do any wacky impressions, you got any?
That was me clearing my throat.
I mean, you could do dueling Michael McCabe's.
You've
been drinking for 6.5 days.
I did a great one. God. Some of my best impressions of you did not get recorded, and I hate it. But you and me, we're going to do a cartoon.
That's the whole scotch and cranberry thing. You know? I wish we had.
Pretty much economics is broken down into two fields, micro and macro. Macro is a large view of the economy, of economics as a whole. It's pretty much looking at a multiple industries, the world economy.
Are we talking globally?
Yes.
So how the flow of money is in the entire planet.
Mm-hmm. Not the flow of money, that's monetary policy. Economics encompasses a whole lot more.
So, all right, I'm going to let you break all these things in. Some basic questions I have are like...
So this could be a 6-hour podcast.
Yeah. How is our economy doing? Is Trump good for it? What role do we play in the planet economically, and are we going to end up going out of business?
So right now, Trump is a non-factor in the economy.
He doesn't matter. What matters is the corporations.
At this point, he's a non-factor because he's focusing more on social issues instead of economic issues. The economy, the government has pretty much been...
Can you kind of describe, like, the theories behind where our economy is currently at, and our maybe economy, some of the things they want to change.
So the U.S. So the economy right now is a the U.S. economy right now is a technological economy based on technology and thought. We are a an idea economy. We don't build a, we don't make a lot of stuff now, but we develop and we come up with a lot of ideas.
We're setting the quality of life for the rest of the planet.
Correct.
All right, there's one species on this planet, and we're at the top of it.
Yes.
We have the best ideas.
Yes.
We're the most liberal. We're the most progressive.
We're not even close to being the most progressive.
We're actually ranked like fifth, right?
Like 20-something.
We are way behind. I do want to get into, like, education.
So we've... But here's the thing. If you got rid of the southeast of the United States, pretty much, the United States is the best country in the world if you get rid of the southeast.
Why the southeast? Who is the southeast?
Pretty much the Bible Belt.
If we get rid of the rednecks,
yeah,
we're the top of the planet.
Yes.
they're the last resistance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We've been here before.
Well, believe it or not, if there wasn't another civil war or another secession by the South, I don't think the U.S. would mind losing that part of the country. Their economy is trash. The people are uneducated.
So our education system comes about in the 60s, and it seems geared toward preparing people for a particular lifestyle. They need to be able to read and write, follow instructions, so they can be good soldiers and they can be good factory workers. Has our education system caught up to our current idea economy?
It's changing right now from personal experience. Both of my girlfriend's kids are in school right now. And they
don't...
My girlfriend's kids. Sorry. Plural. They don't even teach spelling anymore. It's not even a factor in
that's
teaching.
Good.
It's core math is what's being taught right now, and
math
that,
and coding.
And it's fast math. If you can't perform fast math, you're not going to make it in the future. Because everything is in technology.
I'm dyslexic. There's this thing called like the bicameral mind, or like different learning strengths. Like, we can physically see everybody looks differently, but we don't think of our brains as being different. We think everybody's got the same brain everywhere, but it's not. And so I'm a highly creative person, but that makes it very hard for me to function in this society versus somebody who's good at, like, math and spelling. It's easier for them to work through because it's been sort of designed to produce these cogs for these particular jobs.
I see it.
Yes, but it's also... A guy like me, I'm very good at math, and I understand structure very well, and I can see patterns.
I don't know. I see the future is you have two options. Either you're really good at math, or you are good at expressing yourself and pursuing a career where you either show your art or perform or something like that. Because it's just,
we're not turning into a liberal arts college. All right, Michael, hit me with these patterns that you see.
Like, I can see certain mathematics, like certain. I can look at a data set and see what's going on. I can look at an economic data. I can look at a chart. Like, I can see, I can look at a history, like, say, the value, let's say we're looking at the value of the dollar and how the dollar is being traded. I can tell you, I can look at it at certain data and see where the economy is going. I can see which companies are going to benefit and what companies aren't going to benefit. Because believe it or not, you have companies that benefit when we're in a down economy. And we also have companies that
need... Made a lot of money on 9/11. People make a lot of money off of war.
It's not even that. Like, if you are a... Let's say you are a options trader. And you have a bunch of put options that, and these stocks tank, you're going to make a shitload of money because you've already sold your positions in that stock at a higher price than what they're at that day.
What their value is.
Yeah.
All right. Let's pause for a second because I got to pee. Pause. We can do this. All right, guys, we're back. We're definitely going to have to do a part two because I feel like we haven't covered anything. This has all been backup. But we have about 6 points we're going to try and get through here. You're breaking out the book. What's...
No, I'm just bringing it over just in case.
So you were talking about China's economy and how they transitioned from a growth economy to...
So China, over the last, pretty much from 2000 onward, through probably 2014, 2015, China was the largest growth economy in the world.
What is a growth economy?
They were producing the most product, and they were growing at the fastest rate. They were exporting a ton of shit. They were taking on a ton of other... They were buying a bunch of other countries' debt.
They've also been buying everybody's resources. As a Monopoly game goes, China is trying to win.
No.
No?
No, they were just becoming the largest manufacturer in the world.
Okay.
And so what happened was is that eventually their wages started to go up and their production slipped and they had to slow down, their economy slowed down and matured. And they're now becoming more of an idea, a transactional economy. They're becoming more of a mature economy. They're no longer the producers of everything. They are now...
Their quality of life is catching up to Western society.
Yes.
And so are their values.
Yep. And this is why you're seeing the breakdown of the communist system.
And what are they transitioning to?
More of a Western style. Western European, American style economies.
Do we have to have any fear that one day they'll be like, you owe us the money, and they'll just send us flailing into another depression?
No, because if they do, their economy tanks as well.
Okay, so because it's mutually assured destruction.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And actually what's been happening is that they've been selling off a bunch of their euros, and that is why the dollar has been able to come up and compete with the euro. It's the euro is no longer double the value of the dollar.
All right, we're coming up. All my family's from Europe, and they used to come here and shop during Christmas because everything is 50% off plus the sales.
Mm-hmm.
But now maybe I can go do that. Maybe I'll go over there and
buy
their shit.
We're still about 1.5 times. We're still about 50% more. We have to spend 50% more dollars than euros.
All right, so I wrote down the word national, and I can't remember what that was in context to.
National debt.
National debt.
So how that works is that we have... What we do is the U.S. government sells bonds to foreign countries, and then with a certain interest rate on them.
Are bonds like savings, or are they investments in a company?
They're investments in, like, the United States.
Okay.
So pretty much what we're there at a certain interest rate, and generally what we're doing is we're selling these bonds. And the thing is about the U.S., they're called T-bills, treasury bonds.
Everybody said when I was a kid, buy treasury bonds.
Right. What a treasury bill does, it is the base. Treasury bills are the basis of the interest rates that everybody else is based on, because they are the most stable, most highly rated credit in the world. The U.S. treasury bonds.
Why?
Because the U.S. has never defaulted.
Ever.
Ever. Ever. Not on any debt, which is why we keep raising the debt ceiling.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm. And we keep buying.
Are we paying off a minimum every year?
Yes. We're paying off our interest. But we keep... But since the government keeps deficit spending, we're not paying off any of our debt. We need to balance the budget, and we need to have a surplus and start paying off the national debt.
Long term, do we just play this game until all economies merge and we're just one global society?
We're getting closer and closer to that every year. And I have a feeling within our grandchildren's generation, we will have a world government now.
And a world monetary system.
Yes.
A single currency.
Yes.
I like how you look, Brad, right in the eyes.
It's my face of disgust.
Mr. Illuminati.
But we are eventually moving towards more of a world economy.
In the meantime, marketing stocks. What's the deal with stocks?
So stock prices...
It's really great.
No, so the stock market is a fucking... It's a crapshoot. You really have to study. If you're going to invest in stocks, you either have to invest in a bunch of them
in order to offset the downside and the upside. Pretty much what you're trying to do is make sure that your stocks match.
What would you say is a good point of entry? If you want to play stocks, you should have X amount of dollars to invest. If you're not playing with $1 million, it's not worth your time.
Half a million dollars.
Yep. If you're not doing that...
Well, it depends how long you're investing, too.
Yeah, I mean, if you're investing,
young,
yeah.
Fuck it, go large stocks.
Well, that's what 401ks are.
Yeah,
401ks are pretty much...
Go like half your portfolio in stocks. If you're young, fuck it.
Yeah.
But if you're...
Yeah, it's... But what the thing is that... Now, if you're investing into a single company, and you want to put a bunch of into that because you're looking at it and you really studied that company, let's say, like United Airlines. I made a shitload of money off of United Airlines when their CEO had to resign because he was having heart surgery, and they appointed the in-house counsel as the CEO. He's a lawyer, doesn't understand anything about economics or money or finance.
Right,
and
willy-nilly.
So I shorted that day. I shorted United, which means what I did is I sold high, and then what I did is wait for the stock to bottom out, and I bought it back.
Doubled your stock.
But doubled my money, because I sold it, and then I sold it very high, and I bought it very low.
Mm-hmm.
And I made a ton of money off that.
All right, so this is my last question, and then after that, I want you to just close off with Alan Greenspan.
Okay.
you can tell us whatever you want to say about him. I tend to look at technology drives the species.
Yes.
The innovations decide, you know, the morals catch up to that, the values catch up to that, the economy catches up to that. We're going through some amazing technological changes. Where do you see the world looking ahead? Like, what kind of changes do you see in the immediate future? We got AI trading on the fucking stock market. We got no more factory jobs, merging toward a global economy.
Actually, we're going to people creating AI and monitoring AI, and that is where the economy, I believe, is going. We're also becoming much more interconnected. And I do believe that privacy is disappearing.
Do you think we'll eventually end up with, like, luxury communism?
No, I think we're going to end up with no more privacy. And I think everyone's going to know everybody else's business. There's going to be...
We're just going to be slaves of the state.
It's going to be nothing but... there's going to be nothing but transparency. Grand everyone's going to know everything.
I think there's a movement for that fucking socialism you're talking about for sure.
I hate socialism.
Like in everything that you... I mean, maybe I'm just paranoid.
Please tell me why you hate socialism.
Because it doesn't work.
But is your way to say that, like, the people that can make their way deserve it, and the people that can't deserve to just get ground up and shit upon?
Well, I don't want to say that, but I do believe in survival of the fittest. I'm a Darwinist.
But if they remove everybody's jobs and then make it so that everybody doesn't have to work, it's almost like you don't have a fucking choice.
But then how are we going to survive? That's the point. What are we going to produce?
What do we need to produce? Everything is there for us.
No, we still have to produce food. You still have to produce...
Well, the idea is, are we going to have a utopia, or are we going to have, like, a upper class, lower class, locked in situation?
We're already at that upper class, lower class situation.
And you don't see that going toward utopia. Like, it's just what it is till there's a civil war.
No, it never worked.
Because the humans have already proven it. We can't. Communism failed for a goddamn reason.
All right, so close this out. We're going to do a part two. And we're going to get Dave Leopel, if I can get a hold of him. He's an economist or an economic theorist that I know that's also a comic. If I had more foresight, I would have had him for this one. Dave's going to come back with Michael and ask the questions I'm not smart enough to. Tell us about Alan Greenspan.
The unstingiest Jew I know. Alan Greenspan was... the head of Federal Reserve, and he created deficit, and he's the one who pushed for deficit spending. And
what is deficit spending?
Deficit spending means spending more money than you have, and then eventually paying it back once the economy catches up. It hasn't worked, and it's probably, and we've had, and he's been responsible for 3 or 4 major economic crises: the savings and loan crises in the early 90s, in the early 80s. the tech boom in the early 2000s and the real estate bubble in the late 2000s.
Are student loans a bubble?
No, because they're guaranteed by the government, and the government always will collect their money.
As much as they can.
Yes.
All right, where can they find you at, if they wanted to find you?
Nowhere.
Don't find me.
Guys, I'm going to be moving a lot of cocaine. All right, I'm going to have some raspberry cranberries and fuck a couple hookers. And, don't look for me, all right? I'm probably out there with the CIA agent.
What do you think of our impressions? Do you hate me for doing them?
Yes.
I'm sorry. I do it because I think it's so fun to think of you as the wildest person. The person secretly running the planet.
I wish.
Marcus, where can they find you?
Don't find me either.
Actually, if you want to, I'm GentleBreeze04 on Twitter.
Jesus.
Twitter. Facebook. Snaps.
Find me on the Snaps. Ian Ellis at Chicago Open Mic. Check out the Eskimo Bros Squadcast podcast. Shout outs.